Up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Yes, it's No, Superman. Actually, it's a plane with no pilot, and I'm not talking about a little Frisbee-sized drone. I'm joined now by someone who has recently found himself in the unusual position of being more than a passenger, more of a passenger than a pilot in his own cockpit. Tom Schnell is with us, engineering professor at the University of Iowa, director of the University of Iowa's Operator Performance Laboratory at the Iowa City Airport, which is a joint project between the UI and Rockwell Collins. Tom Schnell, hello.
Good morning.
Okay, we're just into the afternoon. You have flown.
Oh, that's right.
You have flown countless test flights over Iowa City in the University of Iowa's research aircraft at the Operator Performance Laboratory. But recently you've been taking some steps toward unmanned flights. What have you been testing?
We have an A-36 Bonanza, which is a single-engine piston aircraft that many private individuals own, including myself, for their own personal transportation. So it's about 3,600-pound aircraft. And we have been given the means by Rockwell Collins to install a really wonderful suite of avionics. Those are the electronics that make navigation possible and communication into this airplane. And it was set up in such a way that part of the control lift on the ground. In other words, how in large air transport aircraft you would have a captain on the left side and a first officer on the right side, and both of them can kind of reach into the flight management system to fly the aircraft and make it do certain things on the autopilot. We now have these roles split between the pilot in the air and the pilot on the ground, and my role as the pilot in the air was mostly being there for safety reasons through the takeoffs and the landings. But en route, the controller on the ground was using that split flight management system's capability to control the aircraft through those particular pipelines that made up the avionics system we put in the aircraft.
Mm-hmm. So you are manually taking off and doing a manual landing, human, meaning you, Tom Schnell, are doing those two things, and otherwise it's pretty much operated from the ground.
That's correct. And takeoff and landing, of course, were not performed, not because it's impossible, but it's expensive to get there, and we just started a year ago. So, you know, crawl, walk, run are sort of the guiding principles there, and we just haven't gone all the way to doing full takeoffs and landings. There were some other systems that were not integrated yet in the ground-based control, such as management of the engine, being able to retract or extend the landing gear, and other systems that were just kind of beyond the scope of this initial one-year project that we embarked on about September of 2013. And completed on September 30 with a demonstration to Rockwell Collins' leadership.
Mm-hmm. Tom Schnell, when you're sitting in that cockpit, not flying the plane, having it being flown by someone else on the ground, how did that make you feel? Do you trust that immediately, or does that take some getting used to as a pilot?
No, it's no problem. I mean, I can see what they're doing. I'm still there to give consent to what's going on, and that's done for safety reasons. So, In a way, it's just that a flight plan shows up on my flight management system and I can look at it, and then I just push accept, and the autopilot does whatever waypoints they put in from the ground. And this is really the way how modern unmanned systems of that size will be flown anyway. It's not like somebody would be sitting somewhere with a joystick controlling pitch and bank and flying it like a normal airplane by hand. You fly by telling it which waypoints to go to.
Mm, okay, so drones, large drones, have been used by the military for years. We know that. What is the potential for large unmanned aircraft used in the skies in the future?
I think there's great potential, and it'll be a huge industry. Not being a part of it as a nation, an industrialized nation, will be like not buying into railroads when that was the new thing, or the automobile when that was the new thing. It is going to be as groundbreaking as first flight by Orville and Wilbur Wright in 1903. It is really going to be a game changer. And by that, I don't necessarily mean to invoke notions of unmanned passenger airliners with nothing but passengers in the back and nobody in the cockpit. We will see this much more in the domain of cargo transportation, maybe search and rescue scenarios. Dumb, dull, and dirty missions, of course, have been sort of what the military has been using UAVs for, long surveillance overhead where a human just wouldn't be willing to be up and airborne for, you know, 40 hours or whatever length of time you could potentially stay airborne. So I see it primarily in the civilian world as the entry will be in the cargo domain.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what are the biggest obstacles that this type of aircraft, unmanned aircraft, faces before we get to the stages that you envision there? FAA approval will be a hurdle?
It's a hurdle, but it's a hurdle for a good reason, because we want to be sure that systems that get turned loose as unmanned systems in U.S. airspace need to behave to the very same standards as human air transport systems will, which means they can see and avoid, they can make good decisions. Humans don't always make good decisions either, by the way. And they can navigate even when the situation isn't quite normal. So the ultimate case, if you think about a human being extremely adaptive, was Sully putting an Airbus into the Hudson.
Yes, we remember that. Mm-hmm.
It's a great feat of airmanship. The aircraft wasn't flying the same way he was used to, so he adapted right away. Another example, many of us may remember the crash in Sioux City. It was a DC-10, I believe, where the triple redundant hydraulic system failed, and they flew the aircraft not by means of aileron control for left and right, but they used asymmetric thrust on the engines, and they figured that out on the fly. So that's the real reason why humans are still in the cockpit is the non-normal situations where you can think outside the box and use skills you have obtained over a long flying career to save a situation that's not normal. Other non-normal situations may involve loss of communications. By the way, Chicago air traffic control went off the air. When I was flying, I was up there and couldn't use their services because they went off the air. But you adapt. You find other ways to do what you need. And the controllers in Cedar Rapids on the ground helped us and were extremely accommodating. So systems need to be flexible, adaptive, and that is quite a ways down the road to make them equivalent to what humans can achieve in that domain.
Okay, Tom Schnell, engineering professor at the University of Iowa, director of the UI's Operator Performance Laboratory at the Iowa City Airport, talking about the initial steps toward unmanned flights, unmanned commercial flights. Tom Schnell, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking with you, Tom Schnell.